We're continuing in chapter 27, the Gnostic Being. Sri Aurobindo was describing, in reference to the question of the nature of our personhood and personality, what it is that we are essentially, and what it is that we are in our expressive personality, in our formed being, in our formless being, and how all of these possibilities, whether we're impersonal or personal, whether we're an expression of a universal nature or minutely defined as one individual in a sea of individuals, we are, in all of these ways, the same as the divine itself. It is one and yet multiple, both impersonal and personal. And so a Gnostic being would be endlessly capable of reflecting those truths in the existence here on earth. So we pick it up from there. A supramental Gnostic individual will be a spiritual person, but not a personality in the sense of a pattern of being marked out by a settled combination of fixed qualities, a determined character. He cannot be that, since he is a conscious expression of the universal and the transcendent. But neither can his being be a capricious, impersonal flux throwing up at random waves of various form, waves of personality as it pours through time. Something like this may be felt in men who have no strong centralizing person in their depths, but act from a sort of confused multipersonality according to whatever element in them becomes prominent at the time. But the Gnostic consciousness is a consciousness of harmony and self-knowledge and self-mastery, and would not present such a disorder. There are indeed varying notions of what constitutes personality and what constitutes character. In one view, personality is regarded as a fixed structure of recognizable qualities expressing a power of being. But another idea distinguishes personality and character. Personality as a flux of self-expressive or sensitive and responsive being. Character as a formed fixity of nature's structure. But flux of nature and fixity of nature are two aspects of being, neither of which, nor indeed both together, can be a definition of personality. For in all men, there is a double element, the unformed, though limited, flux of being or nature out of which personality is fashioned, and the personal formation out of that flux. The formation may become rigid and ossify, or it may remain sufficiently plastic to change constantly and develop. But it develops out of the formative flux by a modification or enlargement or remolding of the personality, not ordinarily by an abolition of the formation already made and the substitution of a new form of being. This can only occur in an abnormal turn or a supernormal conversion. But besides this flux and this fixity, there is also a third and occult element, the person behind, of whom the personality is a self-expression. The person puts forward the personality as his role, character, persona, in the present act of his long drama of manifested existence. But the person is larger than his personality. And it may happen that this inner largeness overflows into the surface formation. The result is a self-expression of being which can no longer be described by fixed qualities, normalities of mood, exact lineaments, or marked out by any structural limits. So we see that this larger being, flexible in form and in volume of force expressed, as if one had many arrows in the quiver. But neither is it a mere indistinguishable, quite amorphous and unseizable flux, though its acts of nature can be characterized, but not itself. Still, it can be distinctively felt, followed in its action. It can be recognized, though it cannot easily be described. For it is a power of being rather than a structure. The ordinary restricted personality can be grasped by a description of the characters stamped on its life and thought and action. Its very definite surface building and expression of self. Even if we may miss whatever was not so expressed, that might seem to detract little from the general adequacy of our understanding, because the element missed is usually little more than an amorphous raw material, part of the flux, not used to form a significant part of the personality. But such a description would be pitifully inadequate to express the person when its power of self within manifests more amply and puts forward its hidden demonic force in the surface composition and the life. Demonic, from the Greek daimon, D-A-I-M-O-N, which means, refers to a power beyond the human, supernatural, divine. We feel ourselves in presence of a light of consciousness, a potency, a sea of energy, can distinguish and describe its free waves of action and quality, but not fix itself. And yet, there is an impression of personality, the presence of a powerful being, a strong, high, or beautiful, recognizable someone, a person, not a limited creature of nature, but a self or soul, a purusha. The Gnostic individual would be such an inner person unveiled, occupying both the depths, no longer self-hidden, and the surface in a unified self-awareness. He would not be a surface personality partly expressive of a larger secret being. He would be not the wave, but the ocean. He would be the purusha, the inner conscious existence, self-revealed, and would have no need of a carved expressive mask or persona. So, the walls that separate the exterior from the subliminal have been removed in the Gnostic being, and the entirety can express itself through the limited form, if it so wishes. So, rather than being the wave that returns to the ocean, one is the ocean and the wave simultaneously. Or instead of simply being the nature in the alcove, you're the entire mansion and the remaining divisions between alcove and the rest of the building have been removed. One is aware of it all. This, then, would be the nature of the Gnostic person, an infinite and universal being revealing, or to our mental ignorance, suggesting its eternal self through the significant form and expressive power of an individual and temporal self-manifestation. But the individual nature manifestation, whether strong and distinct in outline or multitudinous and protean but still harmonic, would be there as an index of the being, not as the whole being. That would be felt behind, recognizable but indefinable, infinite. The consciousness also of the Gnostic person would be an infinite consciousness, throwing up forms of self-expression, but aware always of its unbound infinity and universality, and conveying the power and sense of its infinity and universality even in the finiteness of the expression, by which, moreover, it would not be bound in the next movement of farther self-revelation. But this would still not be an unregulated, unrecognizable flux, but a process of self-revelation, making visible the inherent truth of its powers of existence, according to the harmonic law natural to all manifestation of the infinite. This gets back to the idea that this is a consciousness founded in the truth and in the ordering power of this truth consciousness. It's Ritta, Ritta Chit, full of the consciousness of a dynamic, composing power of awareness. All the character, he writes, of the life and action of the Gnostic being would arise self-determined out of this nature of his Gnostic individuality. There could be in it no separate problem of an ethical or any similar content, any conflict of good and evil. There could indeed be no problem at all, for problems are the creations of mental ignorance seeking for knowledge, and they cannot exist in a consciousness in which knowledge arises self-born, and the act is self-born out of the knowledge, out of a pre-existent truth of being conscious and self-aware. So we arrive at the first chapter of the Life Divine again. All problems are problems of harmony. And true being is conscious being. And so truly aware of oneself, one acts truly. An essential and universal spiritual truth of being manifesting itself, freely fulfilling itself in its own nature and self-effectuating consciousness. A truth of being one and all, even in an infinite diversity of its truth, and making all to be felt as one, would also be in its very nature an essential and universal good manifesting itself, fulfilling itself in its own nature and self-effectuating consciousness. A truth of good, one in all and for all, even in an infinite diversity of its good. The purity of the eternal self-existence would pour itself into all the activities, making and keeping all things pure. There could be no ignorance leading to wrong will and falsehood of the steps, no separative egoism inflicting by its ignorance and separate contrary will harm on oneself or harm on others. Self-driven to a wrong dealing with one's own soul, mind, life, or body, or a wrong dealing with the soul, mind, life, body of others, which is the practical sense of all human evil. To rise beyond virtue and sin, good and evil is an essential part of the Vedantic idea of liberation. And there is, in this correlation, a self-evident sequence. For liberation signifies an emergence into the true spiritual nature of being, where all action is the automatic self-expression of that truth, and there can be nothing else. In the imperfection and conflict of our members, there is an effort to arrive at a right standard of conduct and to observe it. That is, ethics, virtue, merit, punya. To do otherwise is sin, demerit, papa. Ethical mind declares a law of love, a law of justice, a law of truth, laws without number, difficult to observe, difficult to reconcile. But if oneness with others, oneness with truth, is already the essence of the realized spiritual nature, there is no need of a law of truth or of love. The law, the standard, has to be imposed on us now because there is in our natural being an opposite force of separateness, a possibility of antagonism, a force of discord, ill will, strife. All ethics is a construction of good in a nature which has been smitten with evil by the powers of darkness born of the ignorance, even as it is expressed in the ancient legend of the Vedanta. And he's referring here to the opening sections of the two oldest Upanishads, the Brihadaranyaka, the first section, the third chapter, and the Chandogya Upanishad, the first section, the second chapter. And you might remember that they don't agree about what is the nature of the beginning of the world. One ascribes it to asat, from which sat comes, a non-existence from which existence comes. And the Chandogya ascribes it, no, that it is impossible that there is a non-being. There is only being. Well, Sri Aurobindo is generously interpreting the Brihadaranyaka to say that the idea of non-existence is the infinite's freedom, even from self-definition, as true and good being. It exceeds all formulation. But being is true, and it is true in the Brihadaranyaka too. So, these Upanishads speak about how the asuras pierce what would have been a good and auspicious creation with intentional evil. And of course, they are the agents of division. They are the formulation of the powers of the inconscient. Superconscient involving itself into inconscient has certain results, certain consequences. And since we accept this game of evolution and intend to evolve out of the inconscient back to that, we deal with these problems of division, the problems of harmony. But we do eventually conquer. So we continue. The power of love, of truth, of right, will be there, not as a law mentally constructed, but as the very substance and constitution of the nature, and by the integration of the being, necessarily also the very stuff and constituting nature of the action. To grow into this nature of our true being, a nature of spiritual truth and oneness, is the liberation attained by an evolution of the spiritual being. The Gnostic evolution gives us the complete dynamism of that return to ourselves. So there, consciousness and being are reunited, and consciousness as a power expresses the truth of being. Once that is done, the need of standards of virtue, dharmas, disappears. There is the law and self-order of the liberty of the spirit. There can be no imposed or constructed law of conduct, dharma. All becomes a self-flow of spiritual self-nature, swadharma of swabhava. The spiritual self-nature is swabhava, what is essential and expressive power of the soul, and the self-flow of that out into nature to express itself, ta-ta-ta-ta, harmonically. That is the swadharma. Here we touch the kernel of the dynamic difference between life in the mental ignorance and life in the Gnostic being and nature. It is the difference between an integral, fully conscious being in full possession of its own truth of existence and working out that truth in its own freedom, free from all constructed laws, while yet its life is a fulfillment of all true laws of becoming in their essence of meaning, and an ignorant, self-divided existence, which seeks for its own truth and tries to construct its findings into laws and construct its life according to a pattern so made. So quite a contrast there. All true law is the right motion and process of a reality, an energy or power of being and action, fulfilling its own inherent movement, self-implied in its own truth of existence. This law may be inconscient, and its working appear to be mechanical. That is the character, or at least the appearance, of law in material nature. It may be a conscious energy, freely determined in its action by the consciousness in the being, aware of its own imperative of truth, aware of its plastic possibilities of self-expression of that truth, aware always in the whole and at each moment in the detail of the actualities it has to realize. This is the figure of the law of the spirit. An entire freedom of the spirit, an entire self-existent order, self-creating, self-effectuating, self-secure in its own natural and inevitable movement, is the character of this dynamis of the Gnostic supernature. So that reality, self-possessed above in the supramental realm, expressed here in matter, in life, in mind, through the Gnostic individual, an expression of freedom in nature. At the summit of being is the absolute, with its absolute freedom of infinity, but also its absolute truth of itself and power of that truth of being. These two things repeat themselves in the life of the spirit in supernature. Now here Sri Aurobindo is echoing how he began the book with an examination of the nature of being, asat and sat, freedom from all determination, the indeterminable infinite, and that absolute expressed as true being, which we call sat, chit, ananda. So all action there is the action of the Supreme Self, the Supreme Ishvara, in the truth of the supernature. It is at once the truth of the being of the self and the truth of the will of the Ishvara, one with that truth, a Bayun reality which expresses itself in each individual Gnostic being, according to his supernature. The freedom of the Gnostic individual is the freedom of his spirit to fulfill dynamically the truth of his being and the power of his energies in life. But this is synonymous with an entire obedience of his nature to the truth of self manifested in his existence and to the will of the divine in him and all. This all will is one in each Gnostic individual and in many Gnostic individuals and in the conscious all which holds and contains them in itself. It is conscious of itself in each Gnostic being and is there one with his own will, and at the same time he is conscious of the same will, the same self and energy, variously active in all. So, searching for images, we come back to the idea of the peacock who spreads his fan, and each feather has an eye upon it, and each eye is an expressed power of that one being, and each eye sees all the eyes, and all the eyes see each, and is a perfect manifestation of diversity and a perfect manifestation of oneness, and they are not at war. They are coexistent powers. The individual is the all, is the one. The one becomes the all and is in the individual stationed truly. There's a wonderful image of the necklace where in the Avatamsaka Sutra in Buddhism, Chan Buddhism, where each jewel on Indra's necklace is aware of all the other. All are held together by a single strand of being. Oneness is not partitioned by the manifold nature of expressed being. The essence is not negatived by that, but brought into abundant expression. Such a Gnostic consciousness and Gnostic will, aware of its oneness in many Gnostic individuals, aware of its concordant totality and the meaning and meeting point of its diversities, must assure a symphonic movement, a movement of unity, harmony, mutuality in the action of the whole. Unity, harmony, mutuality. So you begin to see the ramifications of a Gnostic individual living among other Gnostic individuals begins to create and shape a community which is an expression of the all in a limited compass without divisive elements, in which the harmony and the melody play at one in a general symphony. So we see then the theme of social transformation brought into it based upon the awakening of one's own true nature. Then personal transformation leads to a social transformation. And all transformed elements express the essence of divinity. It assures, at the same time, in the individual, a unity and symphonic concord of all the powers and movements of his being. All energies of being seek their self-expression, and at their highest seek their absolute. This they find in the Supreme Self, and they find at the same time their supreme oneness, harmony, and mutuality of united and common self-expression in its all-seeing and all-uniting dynamic power of self-determination and self-effectuation, the supramental gnosis. A separate self-existent being could be at odds with other separate beings, at variance with the universal all in which they coexist, in a state of contradiction with any supreme truth that was willing its self-expression in the universe. This is what happens to the individual in the ignorance, because he takes his stand on the consciousness of a separate individuality. There can be a similar conflict, discord, disparity between the truths, the energies, qualities, powers, modes of being that act as separate forces in the individual and in the universe. A world full of conflict, a conflict in ourselves, a conflict of the individual with the world around him, are normal and inevitable features of the separative consciousness of the ignorance and our ill-harmonized existence. But this cannot happen in the Gnostic consciousness, because there each finds his complete self, and all find their own truth and the harmony of their different motions in that which exceeds them, and of which they are the expression. In the Gnostic life, therefore, there is an entire accord between the free self-expression of the being and his automatic obedience to the inherent law of the supreme and universal truth of things. These are to him interconnected sides of the one truth. It is his own supreme truth of being which works itself out in the whole united truth of himself and things, in one supernature. There is also an entire accord between all the many and different powers of the being and their action. For even those that are contradictory in their apparent motion and seem in our mental experience of them to enter into conflict fit themselves and their action naturally into each other, because each has its self-truth and its truth of relation to the others, and this is self-found and self-formed in the Gnostic supernature. Truth of being, powers of the being. We are here in the supramental consciousness, expressive of the infinity of Sat-Chit-Ananda, but in the ordered cosmos that derives from that empowered truth awareness. And in the Gnostic individual, that supernature is expressed on earth. So para prakriti has come into prakriti. The maha shakti has entered into the shakti of the triple world. So there is no division between the high and the low. When the supramental manifests, there is no division between the inner and the outer. It is, again, one. The oneness with which we gain is now the reality we live in. So I think we'll put a bookmark there and continue next week. It looks like we've got a couple of more weeks left in this chapter on the Gnostic being. And so, in Savitri, I think we can continue reading where we left off last time. It's a beautiful section in Book 3. Pardon me. The Book of the Divine Mother in Canto 3. The House of the Spirit and the New Creation. Appearance looked back to its hidden truth, and made of difference oneness smiling play. It made all persons fractions of the unique, yet all were beings secret integers. All struggle was turned to a sweet strife of love in the harmonized circle of a sure embrace. Identity's reconciling happiness gave a rich security to difference. On a meeting line of hazardous extremes, the game of games was played to its breaking point, where, through self-finding by divine self-loss, there leaps out unity's supreme delight, whose blissful, undivided sweetness feels a communality of the absolute. There was no sob of suffering anywhere. Experience ran from point to point of joy. Bliss was the pure, undying truth of things. All nature was a conscious front of God. A wisdom worked in all, self-moved, self-sure, a plenitude of illimitable light, an authenticity of intuitive truth, a glory and passion of creative force. Infallible, leaping from eternity, the moment's thought inspired the passing act. A word, a laughter, sprang from silence's breast, a rhythm of beauty in the calm of space, a knowledge in the fathomless heart of time. All turned to all, without reserves recoil. A single ecstasy without a break. Love was a close and thrilled identity in the throbbing heart of all that luminous life. A universal vision that unites, a sympathy of nerve replying to nerve, hearing that listens to thought's inner sound and follows the rhythmic meanings of the heart, a touch that needs not hands to feel, to clasp, were there the native means of consciousness, and heightened the intimacy of soul with soul. A grand orchestra of spiritual powers, a diapason of soul interchange, harmonized a oneness deep, immeasurable. In these new worlds projected, he became a portion of the universal gaze, a station of the all-inhabiting light, a ripple on a single sea of peace. His mind answered to countless communing minds. His words were syllables of the cosmos' speech, his life a field of the vast cosmic stir. He felt the footsteps of a million wills moving in unison to a single goal. A stream ever newborn that never dies, caught in its thousandfold current's ravishing flow, with eddies of immortal sweetness thrilled, he bore, coiling through his members as they passed, calm movements of interminable delight, the bliss of a myriad myriads who are one. Namaste. Jai Ma.